You want to make your fantasy sports league more than a fantasy? Then you need Trophy Smack.
It's the number one store for fantasy and tournament trophies, belts, draft boards, loser awards, and other ridiculous products.
Trophy Smack is more than just a trophy company with outstanding customer service and products. It's the very essence and heart of every fantasy league. And if you click now, TrophySmack.com gives you free shipping, a free loser poster, and can have the hardware to you in a few days, bragging rights included. Go to TrophySmack.com right now and take your fantasy league to the next level.
What's up, and welcome to the Dynasty Happy Hour with your hosts, Doug Eddy, Tim Keller, and Tyler Gunther. Bring us all inside the huddle. Whether it's in-season or off-season, this is your spot for the best and in-depth Dynasty fantasy football advice. So let's not waste any more time and get right to it with Doug, Tim, and Tyler with another Dynasty Happy Hour.
Welcome back to the Dynasty Happy Hour. Doug's out this week, so it's me, Tim Keller, along with Tyler Gunther, and we have a guest, Mr. Jordan McNamara of Under the Helmet, UTH. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing fine. Tyler, how's everything up there in Minnesota?
We got more snow. Yesterday, we got a little more snow. I had to make a run to Target. And you know when you forget that it snowed and my car's parked outside? And I'm like, oh, I got to make a quick run to Target. Went outside.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's not going to be quick. It's going to take about 15 minutes to clear my car off. And this snow wasn't the light stuff. That is just like you can brush it off and it all just falls off. No, it's the thick stuff. So, yeah, it took a little longer to brush off. But, no, it was a good day. Had some street tacos, Mexican street tacos for lunch with the wife. We have a spot here. It's a tiny little shack, but, oh, it's so good. And we treated ourselves today.
There you go. Jordan, you're in upstate New York, right?
Yeah. We're familiar with the snow aspect of the climate this time of year. So yeah.
Are you guys getting hit with it right now?
Not presently. We got hit late last week. We're not getting it right now. But I think we're supposed to get a storm tomorrow night into Tuesday. So that should be fun.
Yeah. It started snowing here in PA at about 9 a.m.
Okay.
It's not stopped. It's not supposed to stop until about noon on Tuesday. So
excellent.
Yeah, we're getting hit hard.
Get that snow blower out. Do you guys have snow blowers, or is it just Minnesota that's crazy? Okay.
No. Definitely got.
Do you guys have like? Do you guys have like the neighbor's truck with the huge plow on the front style?
I would say no, because the truck doesn't have it, but my neighbor has a tractor.
Okay.
And he just comes over and, you know.
Yeah, four wheelers.
A couple swipes.
Yeah, we have four wheelers up here that, like, if you don't have a plow and you have a four wheeler, you should not deserve the four wheeler. Like, that's kind of how it goes up here.
They're not for fun. They're made for pushing snow.
They're made for pushing snow, carrying deer. Like, that's the only thing in Minnesota they're used for.
I get it. They're getting you to the middle of the lake for the ice fishing, right?
That's true. Yeah. Got to get to that ice house.
Yeah. Well, today, being we have Jordan on, and Jordan is one of the leading minds of analytics. As a matter of fact, he's written two books.
Well, Tim hasn't written books.
I have written books. Jordan has written books. It's two of them now, right?
I'm on this. This is number three. I just released 3.0 this weekend. So it's the 2021 edition. Yep.
There you go. And that is called The Analytics of Dynasty, correct?
Yeah, the Analytics of Dynasty, yep. The first one was the 2019 edition, then the 2020 edition, and this one's the 2021 edition. Each one of them has a different focus, like in terms of, you know, just themes and stuff that interest me. So it doesn't become just like, you know, when you like read a textbook and it was just, you know, the 12th edition was just a few words changed from the 11th edition and they charged you, you know, the max price for it or whatever. Yeah, it's not that. It's totally different in terms of each year, focusing on different things. Like this year had a lot of value focus and which I had never done before, which was kind of interesting. So it was good. Each one has a different focus and it's a lot about, you know, things that happen and then just looking at them and studying them and trying to, you know, predict stuff that'll happen in the future that we can sort of gain an advantage on.
Now, all these are evergreen, right? Like people can go back to 2019 and read it and it still, you know, it still makes sense in this day and age, even though it was pre-COVID. I mean, I don't know if you have anything about that.
I didn't predict world pandemic. Yeah, and one of the beauties of it is I don't really – it is all evergreen strategy. And I don't really even talk about players, honestly. Like, I will – there will be players that will be examples of things. So that might be applicable. But it's not like I'm like, hey, for 2020 or 2021, you know, this player is a really good pick. It's not that, right? It's strategy, and it's thinking about how to put teams together and looking at profiles and those sorts of things that I think are really, you know, when you look at it, that's a great way to get an advantage. And then you search each year for the type of profiles, you know, the players that reflect those profiles is really it's profiles. And then you're looking for players that reflect those, I think is such a huge advantage instead of just randomly trying to, you know, pick players, you know, ordering them just based on, you know, trying to figure out who's better.
Very nice. Where could somebody get each and every one of these?
Yeah, you can go to analyticsatdynasty.com, and you can actually go to analyticsatdynasty.com/shop. They're all in there. I actually have a bundle for the two of them, for the last two, for 2021 and 2019. Excuse me, 2021 and 2020.
It's okay. Nobody really knows what year it is with everything that's happened.
It feels absolutely like 2024, but
it does.
But, yeah, you can get both of them, which is actually a lot of, like I said, it's not overlap. They're all independent of each other. Mm-hmm. But there's stuff in the 2020 edition that I just think is so foundational to how we should think about players, that a lot of the stuff in this one sort of works off of that. And I think that, you know, if you just applied some of the stuff from the 2020 edition and just went and just, I think it is going to make you better as a dynasty player, just in terms of like the base rates and the density stuff. And then I sort of apply a lot of it in this year, looking at different stuff. So yeah, it's not the same thing, and all of it's a little bit different each year. But those, the two in tandem, are pretty devastating for your dynasty
now,
your dynasty leagues.
When does the 2021 edition come out?
Came out on Saturday.
Okay,
so it came out over the night. So I have this thing.
So just get all three. I mean, that's the right answer for everybody, because like you said, you talked about player evaluation and then value, which is huge now in Dynasty. If you don't understand player value, you're going to start falling behind, because I mean, we're all in this stock exchange type thing that's going on right now on Twitter with all these Dogecoin and whatever they are called. And
GameStop, baby.
Yeah, GameStop. And hey, I'm a GameStop member. Hey, you know, I'm in big. No. And like, player values are like stocks, and if you, I don't know, in your book, do you agree with the aspect of, if you have, cuz Tim and I like this. Like, if you have a running back that can get top-notch value like Christian McCaffrey last year, are you in the group that is for trading him because he's at top value, or are you more of the type that holds it because he is a stud running back?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think each player is different, right? So I think the market treats, which is fascinating, right? Because the market's going to treat Saquon Barkley and Alvin Kamara completely differently this year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people are going to start fading Kamara at the, you know, and I think that's going to continue. And whereas I think Barkley's insulated, which is fascinating, because Barkley was the one that was injured and Kamara was the one that was the RB1, right? So sometimes I tend not to, generally speaking, I tend not to really care much about player value when I'm team building, right? So there will be times where I'll say, okay, like, you know, this might be a player that's probably going to trade the highest he's ever traded. The question that I really ask is, is he going to pay that off, right? Because it's totally different than, you know, Julio Jones is a great example of this, right? Julio Jones is one of these players that has consistently been falling in value. And one of the things that I say is value only matters if you're going to try and trade the person, right? So, you know, Julio and I, you know, analogize Julio to my, you know, when I was growing up, I had a 97 Grand Am, right? And I graduated and I was living in my grandmother's basement, and I was
classic
tables,
cars, by the way,
right?
Those are always the cars that everybody's like, those are awesome.
Yeah, it had 190,000 miles on it, and it was worth, you know, it was still looked good, but it was worth, I don't know, if I went and tried to trade it in, it was worth like $50 or, you know, whatever. Yeah. But for me, right, I was driving it everywhere, right? I had no money. I had no ability to go get a car. I had no, you know, I had no cash. And so for me, it was invaluable. Right, because whatever its production to me was worth more than anyone was ever going to give me on the open market by, you know, 10 times. Right, and I think a lot of times we're sort of in a similar play in a similar situation with players. Like we can say, oh, you know, Julio Jones is ever going to be as valuable as he is right now. We need to sell him. Or you can say, for the rest of his career, Julio Jones is probably going to outproduce what his market value is.
Yeah.
That's actually a hold. So I tend to find myself a little bit I tend to, from my research, find a lot of strategies that aren't that are a little contrarian, right? So it's not necessarily the conventional wisdom. And I think when you find yourself in that situation, you're very much not quite as in demand as some other teams. So, for example, like something I talked about in the book is, you know, like in the early 2000s, the Oakland Athletics, and I love to talk about other sports, other strategies, other teams, other concepts and how they apply to Dynasty, because I think a lot of it makes sense. And we're not reinventing the wheel here. We're just trying to figure out different edges. You know, they identified some really interesting stuff in baseball that has since revolutionized baseball, right? On base percentage matters a lot more than batting average and matters a lot more than stolen bases. And so they found a lot of value. Right, like they found guys that were helping them win games at a really reduced price because the rest of baseball wasn't that interested in these guys. So what they would do is they would get them. You know, Scott Hatterberg's a great example of this, right? They would get the Scott Hatterberg. Scott Hatterberg would be highly productive for them, would be outproducing what they paid him. But if they tried to trade him, 29 other teams weren't doing that. Yeah. So 29 other teams didn't care, right? And so then you find yourself in this interesting situation of, well, what are you trying to accomplish? Are you trying to win? Are you trying to be attractive to other teams? Because a lot of times those things don't mesh. And so for me, there's a lot of times where I don't really care much about value. You know, if I could get a first round valuation for Alvin Kamara, would I do that? You know, I'd probably explore it. Yeah. But at the same time, like, I don't think that's really there. And I think everyone's saying to sell him. So you're kind of in a situation like, okay, you know, and I guess one of the things that I found for my book is, like, once you kind of get to that age, right, where you get to kind of mid-20s, I think a general rule of thumb is if you hit for a top 24 seasonal finish, it basically the cost of that is a round of startup ADP. If you miss, it's about 4 rounds, right? So that's about on average, just as a rule of thumb. And again, there's different hits in there. It's going to affect it differently. But as a rule of thumb, right, if you notch a top 24 season, it's going to cost, you know, in a player's mid-20s or so, it's going to cost you at running back. It's going to cost you about a round of ADP. That's the easiest way to think of it.
Well, you brought up Julio Jones and you mentioned value. And I think the discussion is there's trade value and then there's player value, like actual fantasy value. There's the points that player will deliver at his price. And then there's the price to pay to acquire said player for trade. You can get a player. We'll just maintain Julio Jones here, an elder statesman in the wide receiver position, for a much more discounted rate than you could have 3 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And most likely, barring injuries and all that, he should return probably wide receiver two value for you at what he will bring to you with fantasy points. You know, there's two different types of value that we're speaking here. So just on an analytics side, how do you use analytics to scout incoming rookie classes?
Yes, that's a great question. You know, I kind of joke about this, and I don't fully mean this, but I think that if you just didn't pay attention from now until the draft, right, and you just went into your rookie draft and you just knew the positions that players played and the place at which they were drafted in the NFL draft and use some of the stuff from my books, like, I think you'd be ahead, right? So that's knowing nothing about players other than where they went in the NFL draft. There's more to it than that, but that's so critical, right? That is it's just incredibly important. The most predictive thing that you can ever find is NFL draft pedigree. And it matters different to different positions, right? So a first round quarterback and a first round running back, right? They have pretty different likelihoods, but there's also, you know, a first round running back is, I'm not going to say bulletproof, but it's the likelihood they hit is very high.
Yes.
For quarterbacks, right, the likelihood they hit is not that high. It's, you know, you're basically 6 out of 10. You know, if it is sort of a baseline, and if for two hits, right, for a guy to hit twice, and I'm just talking top 12 seasonal finish, like it's 40%, right, of those, especially the top guys, like it's not that high. Right. And so when that's kind of terrifying when you think of like, all right, I'm going to take a shot at a top 10 guy in this class. Like, all right, there's a there's only a 4 out of 10 chance. Right. And so that's one of the things that I really keep in mind is like, you gotta keep those hit rates. And, you know, I refer to them as base rates, right? The odds that the position and pedigree. Right. And again, they're different, right? Each of them matter a little bit differently. So that's where I would start. And then I think you have to look at some other things. You know, I think the combine tends to be overrated, especially I think the combine helps order what rounds people go in. Right. So if a guy runs 4.2x right at wide receiver, there's a pretty good chance he can be a first round wide receiver. Right. And so
we saw it with Ruggs.
Yep. We saw it with Ruggs. Right. If that happens, right, it's. There's only so many of those guys, and they tend to be.
If he's a mid 4.3s, do you think he's the first wide receiver taken in last year's draft?
Probably not, right? Okay. I mean, you can only right. Those guys don't grow on trees, and you have a lot of teams that.
Yeah, it's something you can't teach,
right? Absolutely. And you have a lot of teams that'll say, you know, hey, listen, we're drafting for traits because you know we're drafting for rare traits, and you know, to some degree, I get it. I actually think that the rarer traits are the guys that have really good production profiles, which actually. We have seen historically outproduce the athletic profiles, right? Yeah. So especially the ones that aren't productive, right? So so I do think that the NFL treats combine stuff importantly. And we'll see this year. Like, this is going to be a Wild West in terms of some of this stuff. Yes. And I have a whole bunch of thoughts about this class, but in terms of how we think about it. So that's one thing that I would say. Like, so generally, if you have a guy that so if you have a guy that runs really fast or does all these athletic things, and then he sees an uptick in the draft, right? That's important because he went higher in the draft. Mm-hmm. What you'll see though is within a round, it doesn't much matter, right? So if you have two guys that went in the first round, one of them ran 4.53, and the other one ran 4.24. That's not really predictive of success, right? So I think that's one of the things if I were to sort of look at it and say, all right, the market's overheating someone. This didn't really happen with Ruggs. Maybe, you know, John Ross, someone like that, where the market kind of overcooked them because of how fast they ran. And then you found other guys in that class that were, you know, going a little bit later and they had similar pedigree. Like those things I think are interesting, right? That's, I think, a spot to really – find is where you can arbitrage that pedigree, right? So that's one of the things I look at a lot is pedigree and finding out. I think one of the keys to it, and we've seen this a lot in recent draft classes, and I'm wondering if we're going to smarten up to it. But it's when you get guys at the same draft pedigree that have similar production profiles in college, and they go at vastly different rookie draft prices, right? That's something you really have to pay attention to. So Justin Herbert going significantly after Tua, right? He was going a round after Tua. I mean, I saw 4, 5, 6 round spreads open up in startup drafts, right? Like you can't let that happen, right? That makes Justin Herbert a clear target player. Daniel Jones a couple of years ago, right? Same thing happened, right? And actually it was even worse because Dwayne Haskins was going above him, and Dwayne Haskins was a much later pick. And so when you look at quarterbacks outside the top 10, you'll see that the hit rate on that is significantly lower. And what you'll actually see is they look a lot more like second round guys. And so the difference, so when you take a guy like Haskins over Daniel Jones, right? The answer might be they're both wrong, but the answer is certainly that Daniel Jones has a higher historical hit rate based on, you know, the guys that he went. So I think understanding those, and you know, we saw this with guys this year. I mean, like A.J. Dillon, we'll see what happens. But he was a second-round running back just like Jonathan Taylor, DeAndre Swift, Cam Akers, and J.K. Dobbins were. And there was a round-and-a-half spread at times opening up on that. Like, you can't let that happen. Like, you have to – that makes that person a clear target player. You know, even if it's and basically it was a tax on waiting a year and hoping that AJ that Aaron Jones was gone. But I think there's a pretty good chance of that based on where they took him. So those things are really like the I think the low hanging fruit of identifying stuff. And then you're looking for college profiles. You know, if I were to generally like for wide receiver, you want guys that broke out, and that has different measurements. I tend to look at guys that broke out at 20. At a dominator rating of 20%. And so that's, and I look by age, right? So, you know, dominator rating is market share of, you know, how much of your team's college receiving yards you had. And then it's how much of your percentage of your college's touchdowns that you had. And then you divide by two, right? You average them together, and that's your dominator rating, right? So if a player has 1,000 yards receiving and a 4,000-yard passing offense, right, that'd be 25% of their offense. You know, if he's got 10 touchdowns and they had 30 for a team, right, that's 33%. You average those two together, and you get a dominator rating of whatever that is, 28%, 29%, something like that. And that's sort of what your dominator rating is, right? And that matters more if you're, you know, if you do that at 18, significantly better than if you do it at 22, right? So those sorts of things, because if you're good, you tend to be good earlier, right? That's sort of the idea behind it. So those are the low-hanging fruit things, I think, to look at. And really, I think if you just do those simple things, you can really identify players to avoid. And that's, I think, the critical thing is looking for, hey, what are avoid players, and just eliminating them from your board, and then you can just be better at drafting just by avoiding landmines.
Now, speaking Absolutely. Of landmines, I want to get into this. We're talking about quarterbacks and kind of the hit rate, the 40% hit rate for first rounders. Now, we actually had two first overall quarterbacks get traded in the NFL just, what was it, yesterday? Mm-hmm. And it was Jared Goff going to Detroit with two first rounders in 2022, 2023. And then there's another pick included for Matt Stafford. The Rams hate first round picks. They must have a terrible hit rate with first round picks because they just don't want them.
Well, they
them.
Just haven't taken one in such a long time.
So. That's true. Like, you can't have a hit rate if you haven't made one. So,
can't miss.
So, you guys, huge trade. And we all play in super flex leagues. And this, to me, seems like it's a Jared Goff go out and get him type thing. I don't know if it's just me. How do you guys feel about it? Jordan, what did you think of the trade? And kind of what is your mindset about the teams going forward?
So as a backstory, and I think this is a way to think of this in a sort of different lens, is I look at players, especially at quarterback, is my pet project right now, and I sort of have it on my site, and as part of the membership, I'm doing something I call tiers, and I've struggled sort of how to conceptualize this. Like, I have it in my mind's eye, but I'm trying to really figure out how to sort of convey it. But one of the things that I look at is thinking about players in windows, right? So. And the easiest way to think about it is like, how long do I feel comfortable with this player? Yeah. Right. So like Mahomes, I feel comfortable in like, and I have a five-year window, right? Guys that I feel confident over the next 5+ years are going to be really good. And I only have a couple of guys in that, right? Because that's a long time. And then I have guys that I feel really comfortable with in 2-year windows, right? And there might be guys in the 2-year window that, you know, that I think are probably going to be 5-year guys, but I have questions, whether that's contracts, right? Dak Prescott would be one of them, but I want to see if, you know, his leg is in one piece and he signs a contract, right? Knowing those things, I'll probably move him up. you know, so I look at guys in 5 years, 2 years, then are they, you know, are they likely 2 years? They have question marks about 2 years. And then you look at and see guys that are more year to year that we have significant questions about. And then, you know, from there, I break them down as those guys we have significant questions about, have they hit before, have they not, right? Because those are two pretty different trajectories in terms of profiles. And so for me, coming into, you know, as of what was that, 48 hours ago, I had a I had basically Goff and Stafford next to each other. In the, I think they're 2 year guys, but I'm not sure. Right. I want to see where we knew that Stafford was going to get traded. You know, I was hoping that he wasn't going to retire just because I worry about that with him. But I think now he's traded, right? I feel confident now he's going to play, right? That's a good thing. And now I sort of know where he's going, right? And the value that that could be. And so I say, okay, I'm going to, now I feel much more confident in a couple year window with him. Again, it's maybe not necessarily five because I have retirement concerns and all those things, but definitely two, maybe three, 4 years, something like that. I think I feel comfortable with that. And at that point, it's going to put him in kind of in his mid-30s and we'll see where he is there. But I feel pretty confident with him in a couple year span. So that puts him in a significant advantage for me because I feel, you know, I sort of know what I'm getting, right? And I can sort of plan around that. For Goff, I had similar questions, but I was like, all right, like there's something going on here that we're not privy to. And I think that's a really important decision-making process, is that if there's like something that looks weird, just remember that we don't have a lot of information, right? So we have what happens on Sundays, right? I sort of broke it down, like, just based on what we know in the weeks, like it's a very, very small percentage of a player's life, right? It's a small percentage of what they practice. It's a small percentage of what the coaches observe of them, right? So when there's something there, something weird going on, right, pay attention to that because it's probably information that we just don't have access to, but there's something probably significant there. So there's the falling out with McVay. So I said to myself, well, you know, there's concern. There's a lot of smoke here. So now that he gets traded, and I actually think it shores it up, right, because his contract looks for a couple years like it's going to be tough to cut him. And frankly, he's one of the top 20 quarterbacks in the league. And I know that that might not sound popular, and people are just absolutely tarring him. But let's be honest with ourselves. There's not 32 franchise quarterbacks walking the face of the earth at any given time, and he's one of them. So if there's 20 or 25, like, that's pretty much it. He's one of them. And, you know, it's funny, I actually looked at some of the metrics on him, and him and Stafford are basically essentially the exact same player over the past 4 years. Eerily, in terms of like some of the advanced stuff, like completion percentage over expectation and expected points added, right, per play, they're like exactly the same person. Right now, does that mean they're going to do the same in the future? Right, there's a McVay aspect to that.
I was going to say, right, we have the one guy putting up Matt Stafford. I'm going to say it like this: we have the one guy putting up Matt Stafford stats with the offensive mind of McVay behind him. Correct. And in his ear, and then you have Matt Stafford putting up Matt Stafford stats in the black hole that is Detroit. So I look for, I think this is a, despite the age, I want to say Matt's 32.
Yeah, he's 32. He's got 32? He's got the back issues, yeah, that mm-hmm. people worry about. But yeah,
I think this is a bump for Matt Stafford. He's going to be in a much more offensive friendly system than possibly he's ever played with. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't have a Calvin Johnson necessarily in LA, mm-hmm. but he's got a very good wide receiver core. He's got a backfield there that is, you know, I question whether or not you'll see, you know, this alpha step out from that backfield, mm-hmm. but he's got some pieces there where Jared Goff is now going to a young coaching staff, mm-hmm. First time head coach. They're going to do everything they can to tool up and do everything they can to get this now new face of the franchise, whatever weapons he needs. It could possibly be a positive for both guys, but definitely Matt's in a much better offensive system than he's probably ever been in.
Yeah, and I'm gonna think that I honestly think that the weapons in Detroit could be better. Say Detroit goes with that pick at, what do they pick, 6 or 7? They go a Jamar Chase or a Smith or a Waddle. That could help out Goff. They've already got Hockenson. They've got DeAndre Swift, and I think they might have a better offensive line than LA has at the moment.
Yeah.
Now, and also they have multiple picks the next coming years to help Goff. And Goff is 26. He'll turn 27 in, I think, October. So he's still really young. Yeah, he may not have the impressive arm strength that Stafford had to push the ball down the field, but he is a very accurate quarterback when given time. And I think with the weapons they have there, especially Hockenson, I think is going to get a massive boost because Goff is going to look at the middle of the field and say, here's this top-tier tight end. I'm going to get him the ball. Or, you know what Goff does extremely well too? He can dump the ball off to a running back. We've seen him do that with Gurley. We've seen him do that with other running backs. Swift is a fantastic pass catcher. I think they're going to use him a lot more in that way too. I can't really say it's a negative for either, because I think it could be a positive for both, because Goff, I think, can grow now because McVay isn't constantly in his ear telling him what to do. Maybe Goff can actually grow as a player because he will actually learn things instead of just doing what he's told.
Yeah, and I'll say too, like, for the defending Goff thing, you know, you have a quarterback who has multiple top 12 seasonal finishes. He's got a top six on his resume. Right, that's a good sign of things to come. Historically, now is that pristine in his case? No, but right, we generally know that guys that produce tend to keep producing, right? And they tend to have a higher ceiling, right? Aaron Rodgers is a good example of this, right? Everyone was sort of bagging on Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, it's like, okay, like, he finished two top 10 seasons in a row and the touchdown rate was low. Like, all right, if he has a little bit of uptick in some of his efficiency stuff and the touchdowns are largely random from year to year, like, that's firmly quarterback one upside, right? And so we sort of saw what we saw, right? It shouldn't have been surprising. I'll say in terms of defending Goff and some of the potential, this is a sneaky stat. The Chargers, all 4 years that Anthony Lynn was there, top 10 in passing yards, which no one thinks about that as him, right? You know, and when you and it's actually pretty efficient, right? They did it on not super high volume, right? Three out of 4 years they were in the top 10 in passing attempts, but you know, the other year they were 24th and they finished 10th in passing yards, right? So
I'm so happy you brought him up, because I think people forget he's actually the offensive coordinator, mm-hmm. and he wasn't a bad offensive coordinator. He did well in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. He did well with the Chargers as head coach, and yeah, he kind of derailed a little bit because of the whole Herbert Tyrod thing. But no, Anthony Lynn, and people are so down on Swift. Anthony Lynn gets the most out of his running backs as well. So I don't know. I don't know why people are so down on this.
Yeah, it's to me, it's clearly a buying opportunity, right? Because I actually think that Goff's going to probably slip into like the 20s after you incorporate these rookies. That's just a clear right with his. Again, maybe there's stuff there that we don't know, but I just think in terms of what we do know, it is a pretty good indicator of future success. And again, even if you take the position that, hey, this is going to be a rebuilding team, you know, they're going to kind of go through some stuff, right? That just means he's going to throw more, right? And that's what we want out of a quarterback, right? So, you know, I don't care if they're bad, right? If they're bad, maybe that means they're throwing the ball more to DeAndre Swift. I don't know. But, you know, that's sort of my mindset on it. And, yeah, I mean, I think it's a good opportunity. I'll say for Stafford, I think it's really good too. I was doing some digging, and in terms of play action stuff, just like if you just take the low-hanging fruit, which is like, hey, throw the ball on play action more and throw the ball quicker. Stafford's pretty good in terms of whether or not he holds onto the ball or whether or not it's quick, right? And that's before 2.5 seconds or after 2.5 seconds, right? He's pretty neutral on that. But when you look at play action stuff, right, Stafford was basically 1.6 yards per attempt better when he was on play action last year. They only ran it 24.7% of the time, which was good for 19th in the league. And when you look at the Rams, they ran it 32.5% of the time. That was 5th in the league. So that's a huge, huge increase. And, you know, so you take those and you just sort of apply what he did. Again, this is just rough math. We can't say for sure, right? There might even be more of an uptick than that. But if you just sort of do that, right, that's a couple more tenths of a yard per attempt, right? And that's just low-hanging fruit. And that moves him, you know, now all of a sudden he looks more like a top 10, top 8 quarterback than he does somewhere around 12 to 14, right? And those things matter, right? Those things definitely matter. One thing I'm really interested in with McVay is when you look at his numbers, his passing touchdowns lag behind what you would expect in terms of yards. And his rushing touchdowns really exceed what you would expect in terms of his rushing game. So I kind of wonder if there is a and Goff the past couple years had really low touchdown rates, right? Historically, it's about 4.5 or so, is, you know, vary by year, but that's about the average. So about 4.5% of your pass attempts you'd throw touchdowns on. And so he's been consistently below it the past couple years, but when you sort of average out his time with McVay, it comes right out at 4.6. So I think it's probably some of it's fluky, but because that's right about what you would expect. But that Cousins was below what his career touchdown rate was with McVay. So I wonder if there's something there in terms of just how he constructs his passing attack that it leaves some passing touchdown opportunities not there, whether that's in the goal line or stuff. It's something I have to look into a little bit more. But I'm open to the idea that maybe it's not necessarily as high as upside because the touchdowns might not be there.
Yeah. I think when we talk Cousins and we talk Jared Goff and then we throw Stafford in that mix, one of those guys easily has the strongest arm, and that, in my opinion, is Stafford. It always seemed that there was that mistrust, just a little hint of, I don't want to put this guy in this. We saw with Jimmy G and the Niners, last year and then the playoff run the year before. You just feel that, like, the coaching staff doesn't fully trust that guy to, hey, we're on the 18, we took a penalty, it's third and goal, we're going to let you rifle this one in there. Where Stafford, especially being the veteran he is, he might just walk up to the line and say, hey, Robert Woods, go find that yard of separation, and I'm going to hit the spot because I got the arm
that's
to do
a,
it.
That's so. The thing, is without their draft picks, though, the Rams don't have that specific down-the-field type guy. I mean, Van Jefferson, route runner. Robert Woods, route runner. Yes, Robert Woods can go deep, but he's getting long in the tooth, and maybe the speed isn't there, when it was. Cooper Kupp is not known for speed either. He's a route runner.
Marvin Jones.
Where are they going to get... Marvin Jones. What if they sign Kenny G, but they don't have the money? Will Fuller maybe coming into L.A. to being the speed guy.
That'd be awesome.
That would be amazing. I mean, Will Fuller would just run 9 routes all day. But they need to find that deep threat, because when they got rid of Brandon Cooks, that deep threat was gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Definitely. All right, so let's get back to some analytics talk here. So you talked a little bit about the rookie side of things. Let's say you're doing a startup. So we got the veterans included here. You talked about how your second book works with the third book. And this third book, you were talking about a little bit more value-based, correct?
Yeah.
For startups, I think, especially for startups, at least to start your draft value-based is really the formula that works the best, at least in my opinion. And then you start taking your long shots, or you start taking shots later on in the draft. But let's talk a little bit about value-based and how that works for, like, startup drafting with these rookies.
That's a good question. So I tend to think that historically, and so we have basically, I can go back now, I have data back to 2008. So we have an idea of, generally speaking, what the hit rates are on players, right? So I think one of the traps that we can fall into is having misunderstanding expectations about players. And I think that can really hurt us in terms of, you know, the types of players that we should select at certain costs, and the types of bets we should make, and then really cash out opportunities too, right? You know, some of the things, you know, you get a guy that hits really late, like, we know that that's pretty rare, and we know that the bounce back on that is even rarer. And so when you sort of look at that, you say, okay, well, that's a clear sell profile, right? So you sort of see these trends that appear. And again, it's not, analytics can't answer every question, right? But I think generally speaking, like, it gives you pretty good rules to look at, and then, you know, it's a good place to start with. And then if you have to adapt and vary, you should do that. So generally speaking, the early on in a startup draft, historically, the proper bet has been wide receiver over running back. That's for a couple of reasons. One, they're a little bit more likely to hit up there, depending on how you measure it, right? I mean, there's different ways you could measure it. I would say that generally speaking, that wide receivers are a little bit more likely up at the top of the board. At least they're the closest to running back that they'll ever be. I think that's probably the easiest way to say it, is that that wide receivers early in startup draft, it's the closest that they'll ever be to running backs. And then what happens is as the running backs and the wide receivers go down in rounds, right, so as you get later in your draft, running backs become just a smashing value compared to wide receivers. So I think generally speaking, that has meant, at least for me, and different people sort of come to this conclusion for different ways, but for me it means, hey, get your wide receivers early, because every time you take a running back, every time you have to take a wide receiver over a running back, it's basically a losing proposition. But if you have to do it fewer times and you do it early, it hurts less, right? It's kind of the way I think about it. And wide receivers tend to have a little bit narrower of a value, right? So they might not necessarily have the huge – you don't see them impact – your league on like a wins added basis the way that Kamara did this year, right? You just tend to not to see that. It's really tough for wide receivers to distinguish themselves by that much. But what you'll see is, you know, it's much smoother as they go along, and it's much more narrow, right, in terms of what they produce, right? They have a higher floor, less injuries, those sorts of things. So you tend to get some more safety up there than you might otherwise at running back. But then as you go along, right, every time you have to take, you know, I say after the top 75 picks in a start in a super flex draft, historically, running back becomes this far superior option. This year might be different. And I think one of the things you have to understand, you know, the basic rule, and then is this year different? And I think this year could be different for a couple of reasons. You have some guys that are really productive that have become out of favor with the market, I guess is the easiest way to say it. You know, guys like Jarvis Landry, at this point, they're going to continuously outproduce their ADP just because they're not sexy. That's what it is, I think. You know, they don't quote have the upside. So those guys become values. And, you know, Amari Cooper is that way. Dak Prescott, Mike Evans is that way, right? You're seeing these guys, you know, and to an extent, maybe DJ Moore is going to be this guy. And you see these guys who have had, you know, people always ask me what's the buy low candidates for this year, and I just say the same thing every time. Guys in their mid-20s who have multiple top 24 seasonal finishes, right? Those are your guys that are your undervalued guys. And because it's a really good profile, and for some reason, you know, guys like Amari Cooper are falling in value, which seems irrational. That's one of the reasons why I don't really care much about, you know, trying to preserve future valuation, because I think it's fickle like that. So those are really the things. Like this year, I think it might be different. Quarterbacks vastly different too, right? In prior years, we've had quarterbacks go later. I think if you want a quarterback, right, if you want a top 10 quarterback, you're going to have to go in the first, you know, I've done a startup draft already. I would say in the first 15 to 18 picks, right, you got to go.
I was going to say at least top 20.
You have to go. And again, I don't typically do that because I think generally speaking that if you go quarterback later, so if you kind of hit quarterback in like the 10 through 20 range, as long as you're doing it with the right types of players, you don't see that historically, you don't see that massive of a difference over the first couple of years. But this year, again, some of those questions I still have, right? So a guy like Matt Ryan last year, I would have felt really comfortable with, but this year I'm a little concerned because is he moving teams? Do we know, right? All of those things I have concerns with. So early in a startup draft this year, I'm a little bit less likely to go that route. So I'm trying to preserve some safety. So I will go quarterback earlier this year than I might otherwise in other years.
Hey, you're speaking my language. I
was going to say, too many people have drafted with Tyler in these drafts, and so now it's just the trend. It's hey, we all got to go get our quarterbacks.
I'm a quarterback guy, and for me, it's nice to get it out of the way, and then I can actually focus. And this year, I've realized that I hate running back so much because they are so fickle and they are just random that I would love to go quarterback, and then just hit receiver four rounds, and then like you said, 6th, 7th, 8th round, go younger running backs that have a chance to hit, and go around that route.
I think historically that's been a really good strategy, especially the receivers early. And this year, maybe it's a little bit different. And it's interesting because we have some things going on at the receiver position that are abnormal past couple of years where you haven't had a ton of young guys hit, right? So we had a couple of weak rookie classes. And so that really has made some of the top guys at the position a little bit older. And so that's one aspect of it that I think is it can be a little bit disorienting in terms of positional value. Now we have some guys backfilling that. You know, we've got Justin Jefferson, we've got CeeDee Lamb, we've got AJ Brown, TK Metcalf. We got these guys coming in that didn't have a lot of those backfilling in a couple of years. So you had Michael Thomas, you had DeAndre Hopkins sort of staying up there because no one was challenging them. So now it's a little bit different, but that again creates some value later on because some of the really good profiles are still hanging out later in the draft. And it's interesting because running backs, you know, the upside of running backs is pretty high, right, in terms of what you can do to truly change. But there's a lot of risk there, right? And so there's longevity concerns as well. And so you have to balance those things. And I think I don't think there's necessarily one way that's right or wrong to play. I just think that whatever sort of strategy you want to implement, right, I think you can sort of take from the book something that'll help you in terms of framing your strategy and trying to make, you know, whatever you're trying to accomplish, right, finding profiles and stuff that will help you do that.
Okay, let's talk about towards the end of the startup mm-hmm. draft. We're talking 25, mm-hmm. 30 rounds. I mean, we are, you know, those names that when you're just looking at the screen and you're just looking at the names, you're like,
only the names us crazy people would know, kind of.
You're sitting there like, okay,
JJ Arcega Whiteside, who's this?
He's
right?
The third string running back on this team. This is the sixth receiver. What sort of profile are you looking at? An athletic profile? Are you looking at a production profile? Because some of these people have very limited production profiles because they just haven't been given opportunity. So that late in a draft, when I'm strictly looking at a bunch of names that just haven't really seen an NFL field, this is how I do it. I am then looking at an athletic upside, and if this guy makes his way to the field, he has this and this trait that I think can help him succeed. And, you know, at that point, I'm just looking for that guy that I need a couple big weeks out of this individual and hope somebody can come call and I can move.
The Travis Fulgham pick. Is what they call that.
Yeah. And I'll say that it's historically tough to do that. Because the hit rates on wide receivers, like I only have consistent data going like 20 rounds, but it sort of tells, it doesn't much matter after that, and I'll tell you why. Because when you sort of look at the, you know, when you look at the hit rates on wide receivers, for example, historically, round 18, 6%, round 19, 0%, round 20, 4.6%, right? So what we're, you know, and it's just going to go down after that. You know, it's not smooth either. You know, there's fluctuations or whatever because the sample size is small, but that's just generally a trend you see. So what I do is I think you have to, depends what your aim is, right? For me, my aim there, and this is borne out by a lot of the research that I've done, is the more running backs that you can have on your generally speaking, the more running backs you have on your dynasty roster, both the higher your floor is and the higher your ceiling is. And so when you're deciding between a running back and a wide receiver, what you just said is really critical, right? Is I want a couple of big uptick weeks. And with the hope to sell them. Well, the wide receiver uptake weeks are by and large very difficult to capture because they're one thing I look at a ton in season is start rate, right? How often a player is actually in your starting lineup. And a couple years ago, there was the Kiki QT example where he had like three big weeks and they were in like 4 week spans, right? So no one started him. You know, it was 10% the first week. He hits and then he jumps up to 65% and lays an egg. Then he drops to 40%, lays an egg. Then he drops to 20%, lays an egg. He's back to 10% and he upticks. And then it's the same thing, right? And it's these 4 week cycles. And it's the absolute worst thing because you don't have him in your lineup when you need him. And then when he's in your lineup, he doesn't do anything, right? It's horrible. You'll see is that it's frustrating and it's negative value, right? It's the worst of all things. What you see is that running back, generally speaking, you can capture those, right? And I'll give you a great example this year, Giovanni Bernard, right? Giovanni Bernard, I mean, I had him in 80% of my leagues just because he was so cheap. He was a one injury away guy. And yeah. in the event that the starter goes down, he's a pretty clear running back two type starting opportunity. Yeah. And he, you know, for him, where I was getting him 18th, 19th, 20th round, or I had him in the back end of rosters or whatever, I was picking him up off free agency places, right?
Yeah.
That so massively outkicks what his expectation was that that's the stuff that I really look for. So in that range, and the other place you can do that is quarterback. You know, if you have a backup, right? If you're thinking of guys that are backup quarterbacks, right? That's a pretty good place to tend to get, you know, a high upside production that you can use. And that might be Andy Dalton. You know, I tend to look for guys, the guys that tend to fit that model are guys that have done it before and that are now backups, right? So Andy Dalton's a good example of that. Mariota is probably a lesser example of that on prior production. You know, Jameis Winston's going earlier than that. But like these guys that have done it, right, that are typically better bets, because then you don't face like the Ben DiNucci, is he good or does he suck question. Yeah. Right? Like you sort of know when you put him in there, you know, Flacco to some degree, like you kind of know what you're getting when you put him in. Alex Smith's a good example, right? Like all of those guys, right? So I tend to lean that way. And then,
yeah,
you know, and I think early on in a startup draft, you're trying to do things that are a little bit different, right? So I'll have a lot more rookie picks early on because a lot of those situations aren't clarified yet. We don't necessarily know who's going to be the backup running back in, you know, I don't know, Cincinnati, you name it. Right? There's not a ton of places that are super defined in terms of rosters right now. We just have open questions. But some of the ones that we do know, right, that those guys are going earlier. Madison, you know, those types of guys are going earlier just because we sort of know that about them. But, you know, as the year sort of ages, right, as we get sort of closer to the season, we'll get more information, and those guys really in those later ranges are clear target players.
Awesome.
Yeah, and like you said with running backs, like another player, like a prime example, Gus Edwards. Yes, I started him absolutely. A lot this year.
Absolutely great.
I
example.
Love Gus Edwards, and if you still don't have Gus Edwards on your team, he's going to cost what, a fourth round pick, mm-hmm. because people don't want to. I can you could start him. He gets 10 to 15 points a week. And that's awesome. Right.
And if J.K. Dobbins gets hurt, like he's in one of the best running offenses in the league.
Yeah,
he's the dude. Yep. And like that's and again, you don't need to. I call profiles like that human hand grenades, because what you do is you have them in your pocket, and then when you know when to pull the pin, you throw them in your lineup and they explode. Right. That's kind of the advantage of that particular profile, is because you know when to use it. Whereas at wide receiver, it's a really tough to capture it, and the market has shown that consistently it's really tough to capture it. Where at running back, we know, right? And the market's pretty good at identifying when the weeks are. You know, the one thing I always go back and think about is the Latavius Murray in 2019. He had a 2-week stretch, and literally I have a logo for my site, Embrace the Variance, and it's literally his 2019 line graph of his points. Is the logo, and he was the running back one by like 10 points over the running back two in a 2-week span. The impact of that is enormous, right? Because you are probably at worst 1-1, right? And you're probably a pretty heavy favorite to be 2-0 just based on what he did with the rest of your, you know, in the rest of your team. That's an enormous advantage, right? And so looking for those types of opportunities that have really asymmetric outcomes, so huge for your dynasty team. So I really think thinking about that as a strategy and trying to capture that is really critical.
So one more question before we start wrapping up. Mm-hmm. Name some running backs that you actually like some backup running backs that people can go out and search, like the Gus Edwards or players like that.
Tony Pollard's a good one.
Yep, Tony Pollard's a good one.
The general J.D. McKissick.
Yeah,
would that be one?
We'll see with him, right? So generally speaking, the way to do this is there's two types of guys that fit the profile. They're either, and it's both typically guys where there's been an investment. So one of them is, and we're talking both backups. So backups that have draft pedigree. So you think about in that aspect, like Madison's a really good one. Like AJ Dillon was a good one, right? Because we sort of know, about 40% of third round running backs when they come into the NFL, they hit, right? So that's, I mean, that in terms of hit rates, that's actually like in the top 5 or 6 of positions and rounds. Like, that's actually pretty good. And especially at the cost you tend to get them at. So he's like, that's a profile, right? So if you, and, you know, Tony Pollard's a lower hit rate guy in terms of being a fourth round guy, but he's one that they spent significant on. So you kind of have a feeling that, hey, he's probably not going to get replaced, right? Which is really what you're trying to dodge at this time of year. So that's really one to look at. The other thing is to look at is some investment, right? So, you know, one of the things that, and this wasn't a particularly popular one, but Malcolm Brown a couple years ago. Malcolm Brown left, you know, was a restricted free agent, got actually an offer from Detroit, and then was brought back to the Rams. They signed him. Basically in response to the offer from Detroit. So we had a pretty good feeling that he was good, right? Because we know two teams were interested in him, which is actually a lot of information considering if he had just went to the free agent market, we wouldn't know, we probably wouldn't know how interested the Rams were in retaining him, right? So that's useful knowledge. Where there's been a free agent signing, like Latavius Murray is a good one. You know, so different, so players that I would look at in terms of that, you know, Latavius Murray is the classic example of this, and he'll be the classic example of this until he's no longer valuable. You know,
Philip Lindsay.
Philip Lindsay is going to be interesting because he's not going to be, you know, what he does in free agency, right? So that'll be an interesting one. You know, Kareem Hunt's a more expensive version of it, right? Because he's done. Giovanni Bernard, again, pretty consistent there. You know, Gus Edwards, you know, Chase Edmonds, we'll see what happens there. You know, those types of guys. Just looking down just the rest of the list there. You know, Darrington Evans was a day two running back.
Oh, I love Darrington Evans so much.
Yeah, it didn't fit kind of what they wanted to do, but that opens your eyes. You sort of have to be attuned to what they spent. So that's one of the, you know, that's really the thing there that I tend to look at for those guys. And I'll be honest with you, it's funny. I actually made a trade for Patrick Mahomes this weekend. I spent a lot. But one of the key aspects of the trade was that I was like going to not take no for an answer on was getting Gus Edwards in as the throw-in in the deal. You know, and so
I love it. I love it.
That sort of thinking about that, and again, that's just continuing to sharpen your odds. Of getting a guy who can be a high impact, right? And it doesn't look, and one of the things that sort of in my strategy is it doesn't look particularly great in March, right? No one's going to come calling for Gus Edwards as a huge uptick guy in March, but when it matters, right? When it matters, when the games are being played, he can be a really big impact guy, and that's kind of what I like to put on my roster.
And think about this: Gus Edwards could be a free agent. Gus Edwards leaves. He lands in Atlanta. You've got a starter at running back. So if you were to go out and buy that guy now, just as, like you said, the hand grenade, which I bought him for, I think it was 404 in a league this year. And I was like, okay, take it. Take my pick because I'm not going to get a guy like Gus Edwards on my team.
Yeah,
at
the fourth round.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, there's a chance that Gus Edwards could be on a different team, like say a Pittsburgh or in Atlanta, and that value just skyrockets. And I've got a starter on my team, which I can instantly just set it, and he's going to get me 10-plus points.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And that's, you know, Jamal Williams is a good example of this too, right?
Yes.
Like, he hung around. I just, you know, I love all these. Like, I sort of live in this space of these guys, right? So guys like us. And Gus Edwards, like, people wanted to, you know, I saw a lot of negative treatment of him in terms of Twitter and some of the comments about him, but like when you look, like he was top, I think the last I checked, like he finished at second in terms of yards over expectation this year. Like that's where, like, he was really good. and you know, so that is something that can be highly, highly valuable if something were to happen.
Yeah, he's a, to me, Gus Edwards is Chris Carson, like 80% of Chris Carson. Which is fine. Mm-hmm. Like, that's great. Yeah. Except he stays healthy and Chris Carson can't. So there's the difference.
Right.
Absolutely. Well, guys, we've done it. We've brought the film with Tyler and the analytics side with Jordan. We've brought them together and everybody lived happily ever after. You know, I haven't seen it too much. I honestly haven't been on Twitter nearly as much as I was this time last year.
Good,
but I haven't
good.
Seen
That's
the
good for you.
Twitter version.
Yeah, you're lucky because you're sitting here saying you haven't seen it much. Oh, it's out there. It's out there.
There is that constant film versus analytics debate. Personally, myself, I think both are very valuable. I
agreed.
I fancy myself as a film grinder. I watch the film. The past couple years, I've started to develop. I take the metrics that guys like Jordan here really have developed and you know, sharpened. And I try to pull as much of that information, and I try to pair up what I see on film with what the analytics are telling me, and I try to pair them up. And I found success in that. So, hey, guess what? There are some of us that can live in both worlds.
And I'll say this. I think it's I think that people that are that do analytics that kind of don't whether it's looked down on or you know give a hard time to people that are film people, I think that misses the mark, right? And I do think that there's value in both. It's contextualizing it, right? It's understanding what the value of each is, right? And that's ultimately, we've seen high-level franchises that are really good at analytics incorporate film stuff, right? I mean, this is a bad example, but the Houston Astros, I mean, you could just say, yeah, they cheated, but they found systems to actually incorporate a lot of what they did in their models in terms of evaluating players based off of what their film was. And actually, even better was they found out what the flaws of their scouts were and could adjust for it. You know what I mean? So that was really – and guys that were making consistent mistakes on evaluating players, like, they knew that, and that was highly valuable.
Yeah, they could start to find the bias.
Right, you know what the bias is. You know, if the guy consistently misgrades curveballs, right, you sort of know that that's valuable, right?
Yeah. Okay, you're not going to scout pitchers anymore. You know, you're just taking off.
Keep scouting them the way that you are, and then we can adjust for it, right? It's interesting.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
The best quote that I've heard about analytics is, analytics are a lot like a bikini. They show you a lot, but they don't show you everything. Right, and that's the GM of the Golden State Warriors, Bob Myers. And you know, when he, that's I think
I'm a fan. I'm now a fan of him. So that's a great quote.
Yeah.
That's and it. What's great is when I see a guy that on film, I'm like, man, this guy's really popping to me, and I go plug some numbers into my formulas, and then all of a sudden I'm like, wow, all right, I'm gonna put a little star beside this guy's name. And I'm gonna scoop every share I possibly can up, you know, at the end of the second round, and I'm gonna look like a genius here in 2 years. But
Then it goes for me. It's I watch the film, and then I'll have somebody approach me. Well, this was his analytics. You know, Zach Moss was a big example. I didn't see it on film, but people were throwing the analytics and stats at me, and I'm sitting here. I'm like, but I just don't see it. I don't see the transition. I don't see the burst or anything. And he played for Utah. I mean, I struggled to see it. And the helpfulness of the analytics community is I go back and I watch to see if I wasn't missing anything. And it's the same with a Zach Wilson this year at quarterback. Like Tim, he's told me he loves him, and I've watched him. I've watched probably 12 games of Zach Wilson, and I'm sorry, Tim. We're going to have a huge debate on this guy, but I'm not in on him. But I mean, maybe I'm missing something. His completion percentage was fine in college, but I'm not seeing this accurate passer that everybody else is seeing. So, yeah, it's a cat and mouse game to some, but to me, it's very helpful to have both.
Jordan, before we get out of here, one last time, tell everybody where they can find you and where they can find all those books.
Yeah, you can go to analyticsofdynasty.com and, you know, analyticsofdynasty.com/shop. That'll get you where the books are. So you can find the Analytics of Dynasty 2021 edition. I've got a bundle there with the 2020 edition as well. And I'm actually in the off season. I'm doing, you know, I have a membership to my website. I'm doing daily dynasty podcasts. So we sent different podcasts each day. Today's was actually about Stafford and Goff. Just the benefit of recording one each day. I had just right there in terms of, hey, I got to put something out for tomorrow. What am I going to do? Oh, look what we have here. So
nice.
So I got that out last night. And it's different stuff. It's different topics, right? And so I have, I've got my tiers over there as well, and I'm going to have some data coming into as the off season goes along. So it's a lot of February projects going on. I'm pretty excited about it. So you can find it all at analyticsofdynasty.com. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at McNamara Dynasty. If you have any questions, go ahead and hit me in DMs. Awesome. Mine are open.
Awesome. And he's doing it the right way. He's teaching you math, but he's breaking it up into different sections, you know? It's not just giving you one big textbook. It's a year after year. You learn a little bit, and then he adds to it. So that's really the way to teach. Before we get out of here, wanted to thank our sponsor, Trophy Smack. Remember, they have the PlayStation 5 contest going on. Go over there, check them out. Use the code DHH ring at checkout if you're going to buy a trophy ring, the grills, all that good stuff over there. Get yourself that free $60 ring over there, Trophy Smack. And surprise, surprise, we have a very special episode coming out on Wednesday this week. Mr. Matt Barry himself is going to grace us with his presence here on the Dynasty Happy Hour podcast. Tyler and Doug will be sitting in the seats for that one, so I'll miss Matt Barry, but can't have two geniuses on the show at once. Way too much.
So I shouldn't be on. Oh, come on.
Yeah. So look forward to that. That one should be out sometime Wednesday or early Thursday. But until then, we'll see you right back here on the Dynasty Happy Hour.